Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yes, hello out there, everyone, and welcome back to None But the Brave, a presentation of Evergreen Podcast. I am Hal Schwartz, and as always, I'm here with my great buddy Flynn McClain. And Flynn, I'm back from Vegas and San Diego, and I have to say I'm pretty fired up.
Yeah, it looks like the tour got off to a pretty good start with two really good shows, especially San Diego last night. He looked like he was on fire from the videos that you posted to Twitter, and I hope he can keep that energy up. I guess that's what 2 days of rest between each show can do.
Yeah, we should probably go in order, but San Diego was a phenomenal show. He really seemed to have found the fountain of youth, even compared to Friday night in Vegas. Part of it is I think he loves those old buildings, as we know. But from the moment they came out last night, there was just an energy that I really have not felt so far on this tour. And that's not to knock the other shows, but he really brought it last night. And I have to say, walking out of that show, I found something that I really wasn't sure I was going to find again, that sort of buzz off of these shows. And I'm really on a high today.
Well, as you said, let's go back to Phoenix and do it in an order here. Now, what you're describing, this energy, I felt like I saw it on the stream watching the Phoenix show. Obviously, streams are not known for the most high quality audio or video. But just what I could feel, he seemed to have like a weight has been lifted off his shoulders, and he just seemed freer. And obviously, he was in a lot of pain last year. He was talking to Jim Rotolo on E Street Radio about a week or so ago, and he said he was in a lot of pain at the end of the tour. And so that we may not have noticed at the time, but comparing that to now, it is night and day.
Yeah, and I do want to say a few things based on what he said in that interview, because MetLife 3, which we've already talked about and was a magnificent show, in light of what we now know and what he has said, it's mind-boggling what we saw that night at the Meadowlands. But getting back to Phoenix, I definitely agree. I didn't really watch the stream, but I've seen it in the other two shows. He seems like he's just much more comfortable, and the band is playing really well. And one of the things that you're getting now is there is a bit more variety and the show feels a little bit more freewheeling. I will say both shows that I saw over the weekend, we'll get to the specifics, did have more of a feel like stuff could happen. And again, this is not to knock last year's shows, but that was certainly not a feeling that I think most people felt while watching last year's shows.
That is definitely the case, that we did not have that last year. After about a couple of weeks, we knew what the set was going to be, and we could predict it pretty easily. This year, we've seen the printed set list for these three shows, and there has been some variation here. Now, obviously, from Last Man Standing through the end of the show, there aren't many changes in there. I think there have been three over the three shows, and that's all been like Twist and Shout or Viva Las Vegas or Detroit Medley. But the first half of the show, he went off it. He had Something in the Night on there a couple of times. He had Atlantic City on there. And you said he was calling out audibles last night. So
he was.
He, you know, there is a different feel to these shows. Even if I haven't been there, I have a different feel from the streams.
And by all reports, Phoenix was a strong show. And I spoke to a number of people. Everyone was very pleased with, I think, both the energy, the set list. It had a little bit better feel, I think, for a lot of people. And we all enjoyed the shows last year, but I think even Bruce himself, he acknowledged it with Rotolo, that he's going to be mixing up the front of the show more. I think that they have more fun. We can discuss, and we'll never know exactly what was going on behind the scenes with the ulcer. Clearly, he said at least 2 to 3 months. I don't have any doubt that it impacted the European shows that I saw. But I think that they have more fun. You can look at it. I posted a couple of videos by chance where I caught him yelling out songs. And we'll get to Vegas now. In Vegas, he played Hungry Heart after Mary's Place, and I happened to be recording about 45 seconds of Mary's Place. And at the end, he calls out for Hungry Heart, and you can see it in the video. And there's something about a Springsteen show, and this is what we talked about, because we did that episode last year where we talked about the multi-night stands and people seeing repeat shows. He knows those people are there, and he knows that the show should have a certain feel. And I think they are very close now to capturing the type of feel that we've had in the past. As you state, the second half of the show is not going to be as freewheeling, although I actually find the second half of the show very effective for what it is. I think we'll get into some specific instances where songs we feel could be varied from night to night. But the Rising Badlands sequence followed by the encores really gives the crowd a lot of red meat. And especially last night, the crowd was in a frenzy in San Diego. I'm so excited to talk about that show, but I'm reining myself in not to jump ahead.
All right, well, let's go back to Vegas. And specifically, what I really liked was Roll the Dice. It was the opener, just like it was at Mohegan Sun. And he did use the same intro about, did you lose your money? Someone had to lose their money to get us here tonight. It was right out of 2014 Mohegan Sun, but I really love this version. It has Roy starting off with the piano, over which Bruce does his little spiel, and then it kind of goes from there. And that just looked like a lot of fun. That was one song that I really hope I see this year.
Well, perhaps at Mohegan if you're there. It worked great, and it worked great at Mohegan in 2014. Now, if anyone was watching the stream or has seen the videos of Roll the Dice, I did spend $5 early in the day to get a set of fuzzy dice. They were red. They did wind up on the stage, and in the first verse or so, the dice that he picks up, those are the dice. So, and then he tossed them to, I think, people we know on the other side. But it was funny, and a couple of other people threw dice as well. Obviously, that's tradition. I don't think most of the Vegas audience was ready for that, but it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it definitely was at 92 again. But the other highlight for me, obviously, was Viva Las Vegas, and I thought that was great. We watched it on the stream, and I thought they really nailed it. The horn sounded amazing on it, and Steve had that nice little solo going on that I don't think he played at either the 2000 or 2002 shows.
I don't think he did, and it really was quite good. I want to talk about the main set because, again, it felt like there was just more of a spark that things could happen. Now, early on in the show, he had, I believe, Something in the Night on the set list, and he also had Racing in the Street, which was going to follow Promised Land and prior to Spirit in the Night. He dropped both of those, but Racing in the Street was played later. And I have to say, the Racing in the Street before Last Man Standing worked phenomenally well. Now, the version of Racing in the Street was shorter than we're used to in the reunion era, especially the last decade or so. If you listen to the phenomenal version from the July 5th Paris show, that one went on for like 11 plus minutes. This was much more compact, I think around 8 minutes. But it was really highly effective, and I thought it just worked great going into Last Man Standing. Obviously, we'd like to see plenty of songs rotated through, but I definitely would say that I hope Racing shows up again.
Oh, me too. And I thought it was odd placement on the printed set list between Promised Land and Spirit. That just seemed like kind of a whiplash kind of sequencing, whereas going from Hungry Heart, have a pause, and then Racing in the Street into Last Man Standing, that obviously worked a lot better, and I really am looking forward to listening to that on the recording.
I'm going to be curious myself to hear, especially Vegas. Now, the crowd was not quite as amped up, and it was a Friday night in Vegas, and, you know, they get some weird crowds there. There's a lot of people, invited guests of the casinos and all that, but it was a good crowd. But I'm curious to hear how it plays out on the official bootleg, and I expect that'll probably be out in the next day or two because Phoenix is out. I also felt that the sequence of Ghost and Letter to You, Friday night, I was struck by how good Letter to You is. We have felt that some of the other shows that it is dragged and it didn't really grab the audience. I thought they played the hell out of it in Vegas. And I think that that's a very good sign. Ghosts also, now I think Ghosts in the Rotolo interview, he talked about how much trouble he was having singing with the ulcer. And I think Ghosts was definitely one of the songs affected by that. Now that he's completely healthy, I think that the versions of Ghosts are now a lot more realized too.
Well, that's great because that was always one of my main highlights. And yeah, I agree with you. Letter to You did kind of drag at times, but it seems it's a bit more of a crisper version. It's a little bit more, can we say it's even more, it's faster paced? Is that, could that even be an accurate description?
It's hard for me to say, you know, watching these shows live and I'm trying to be locked in, I don't know that I would have picked that up. There's something about it that I think is making it more effective. Well, obviously listen to the official bootlegs when they come out. I haven't really listened to Phoenix yet. Did you listen to Letter to You from Phoenix?
I got to be honest. I haven't listened to any of it yet.
Okay. Well, I'm sure we'll be listening to it in the future and we can report back on that. The show was really top notch. I mean, you mentioned the Viva Las Vegas. The crowd was in a frenzy. That was when the show hit its energy high point. And then the rest of the encores from there work really, really well. I think, you know, and trying not to have a lot of criticism, and there's no reason for a lot of criticism. The one thing I'll point out is that I really don't think that Don't Play That Song works very well. And we've talked about this before. Usually when he starts a tour and he does new material and then he drops it, it rarely comes back. This is really surprising that Don't Play That Song, which was only played a handful of times last year, and I don't think was working in 2023, has been brought back and has now been played all three nights.
Well, I was going to mention that even in addition to the songs that are kind of new to the set, we're talking Lonesome Day and Spirit in the Night, that what's not being played is also pretty notable between Kitty's Back, is being 0-3, Johnny 99, 0-3, E Street Shuffle, 0-3. I think dropping those songs actually probably gives it kind of a crisper flow. It's pretty much boom, yes, boom, boom. Whereas on those three songs I mentioned, we understand Bruce wants to give the horns a chance to shine. He wants to give himself a little break. Maybe he doesn't need it anymore. But that kind of stuff does kind of drained the momentum from the show. And I got to be honest, I am not missing those at all. Now, regarding Don't Play That Song, I understand it's really anything from that album is kind of not really on anybody's top 10 to hear at this point. But at the same time, it is a song from this century. Looking at the count at the show in Phoenix, there were 29 songs. Only 10 of them were post 84. So I like having more recent stuff in there.
Oh, I totally agree about the recent stuff. The problem that I have with it is, as we know, there were several new songs played early last year that were dropped. Don't Play That Song, which has now been brought back. Burn and Train, which is gone. House of a Thousand Guitars, which didn't really work all that well, and I really wouldn't expect that one to come back. And then you also have If I Was the Priest, which was played three times, which hasn't been played again. I'm all for stuff from this century, and any one of those three songs, especially Priest and Burning Train, those would be incredibly welcome to return. And I'm surprised because we have gotten some, not all the info on the rehearsals, but we've also seen the soundcheck songs that neither of those songs have been rehearsed yet, as far as we know.
Yeah, and that is a disappointment. I was really looking forward to hearing If I Were the Priest last year. And I, you know, I went to five shows. I was 0-for-5 on that one. He played it three times. I think it was at the end of February in Texas and Oklahoma. And that was it. And it was a tremendous performance. He really let Steve go wild on the guitar on that one. And yeah, it's one that, yeah, I would have brought that one back way before I would bring back Don't Play That Song. But I guess it is what it is at this point. And maybe one day he will bust out Priest or Burning Train. But unfortunately, right now, I'm not really holding my breath for that.
I'll tell you, at the start of the show where he seems to be intent on picking up the energy compared to last year, Burning Train in one of those early slots would work really, really well. Now, I think that they should tweak the arrangement. I think the sort of call and response at the start of the song seemed a bit weird, and maybe that's what threw it off. And I don't know that the audience responded to the song in the way that he wanted, but I do believe there was an arrangement there that will blow the doors off the building if he plays it.
And I agree with you 100%. I felt that the vocals in the early part of the song with the OOOs, as I believe you were referring to as a call and response, it felt forced. It didn't really feel natural to the song, and it did kind of make it weird, basically. So maybe if he did kind of drop that and drop those vocals and just play it more straight from the album, it would be great.
Yeah, I hope that returns. So now can we get to Last Night in San Diego?
Go ahead. Go nuts.
All right. Well, we left Vegas, and full honesty, I thought Vegas was a very good show. You know, you and I had talked about it on the phone, and I was really, really pleased with the set list, with the performance. It was a great weekend in Vegas. But still, I would say that I wasn't feeling quite to the level that we have expected in the past, even as late as 2016, the 2017 shows I saw in Australia, especially the Brisbane shows. But I felt that the energy was heading in the right direction. And last night we wound up in San Diego. And for me, at least, if you look at the set list on paper, the Vegas set list is superior. I mean, we got Roll the Dice. We got Viva Las Vegas. You got Racing in the Street in there. I was happy to see Hungry Heart. But last night's show was an absolute barn burner from the moment it started. Now, I sent out a video today on our Twitter account, or X if you prefer, and of the solo at the end of Prove It All Night. And he shredded that in a way, certainly not in Vegas. It was incredible. And I knew that was when things were on, because Prove It All Night was the second song of the night last night. And at the end of Prove It All Night, if you watch the video on our feed, you can actually see him during the solo, which is crazy, calling out an audible for No Surrender. He turns to Steve, he's playing the solo, and he's calling out the audible. And when the song ended, they went into No Surrender. Now, the song that was on the set list there was Something in the Night, which obviously is a song I like to see. But I have to say, he was 100% right. The energy in that building at that particular moment, Lonesome Day, Prove It All Night, if he had gone into Something in the Night there, great song, but obviously slower tempo. I think the burst that is No Surrender really served the night well, and it really kicked things forward.
I agree. On paper, Something in the Night as the third song, it doesn't really work for me. I remember on the reunion tour when he opened with the Five Rockers, and Something in the Night was always the last one, or was usually the last one, and that's where it works well. Between a couple of other rockers, I don't see it working very well. I think if he was going to play it last night, it would have been best after Promised Land. And so I agree with you. He made the right call 100% there.
I totally agree with you. And the printed set list also had Atlantic City following Something Tonight, which I love. But again, with the building going crazy, those would have been weird selections in the third and fourth slots. Anywhere else in the show, no problem. But he made the right call going to No Surrender, and then No Surrender went into Death to My Hometown. And you talk about songs from the century. One of the things I thought that was cool last night, he was clearly very aware that they had not been to San Diego since 1981. That's the E Street Band. His last show was a solo show in San Diego in 1996. He gave a selection of songs that reflected what had happened in the last 12 to 15 years or so, because he brought in Death to My Hometown. He played the Wrecking Ball version of My City of Ruins. He was even dressed like the Wrecking Ball tour. It was like he almost said to himself, for tonight, we're going to go back to 2012 because I wasn't here then. I don't know if that was intentional, just some kind of coincidence, but it did seem to be planned.
All right. Well, why didn't he play a show from the Rising Tour or a show from the Magic Tour?
Well, you got more songs from this century, I think, in this show than maybe any other show on the tour, because you had Lonesome Day, you had Death to My Hometown, Ghost Letter to You, My City of Ruins, you had the Only the Strong Survive stuff, Mary's Place.
12, yes.
12. Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah, 12 out of 27. That's pretty darn good. So, yeah, he's definitely going in the right direction there. But I was wondering about the transition and segue from No Surrender to Death to My Hometown. It would seem to me that it would kind of come to a little halt there. Am I reading that incorrectly?
I think the crowd at that point was flying so high after No Surrender, and I don't know what percentage of the crowd knows Death to My Hometown. The portion of the crowd that knows it, I think, is generally very enthusiastic about it because of the haze, and it's a cool song for the audience. I have a lot of fun with it, and I didn't notice it not working. I thought pretty much really everything worked last night. From there, he went into Ghost and Letter to You, and again, those were top-notch. And The Promised Land, now, I tweeted out a video. There was a wonderful moment. There was a young woman in front of me with her mom who had a sign that said, basically, my badass mom has been waiting her whole life for a harmonica. And Bruce came over to finish the song. He took the sign and he held it up for the audience. And then he gave them the harmonica, and their reaction was just so pure and so genuine. They were so happy. They were hugging. It was just amazing. And the response to the video, the people who have been commenting, everyone is just like, oh, that is just so amazing to see. And it makes them feel good. It just, you know, and that's one of the things he does best as a performer. That kind of moment is just very, very special. And I was blown away. You know, look, I've been very fortunate to see what I've seen. And it's always so great to see that level of personal touch towards the fans.
Well, that's something he's had his entire career. Yeah. And it's great to see that it continues. I know a lot of people have gotten harmonicas, and it does seem it's always an intense moment. I mean, he's giving you an instrument that he played on stage at a concert. And I mean, it's practically rock history just right there in your hand. So that's definitely a great thing to happen for that mother and daughter.
And a harp in the key of G, I saw it. It's just an amazing thing for a fan to take home. That is for sure.
Yes, the only other thing I would like to take home is the guitar, but that's not happening.
That I don't think you're going to get to take home.
Oh, okay.
Hey, everyone. This is Tuck from Fit for a King, an off-road minivan. Every week, I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.
The number you have reached is 100.7 WMMS.
It wasn't just a radio station, it was a lifestyle.
Cleveland is a rock and roll city for sure.
We're gonna be like chocolates.
Get down!
The wrath of the
the buzzer. WMMS. Cleveland.
The rise and fall of one of the most iconic radio stations in America. Profiles. The Wrath of the Buzzard. PROH Files. Subscribe now wherever you get podcasts.
And from there, he kicked right into the tour debut of My City of Ruins. And there's probably some people who are like, oh, we saw that in 2012. I don't remember. Did he play it much in 2016?
I don't think he played it at all.
Okay.
Wasn't there in New Zealand? Wasn't there an earthquake in the same town where he played a few months earlier?
Oh, you're right. Yeah, in New Zealand. You're correct.
Right. Yes.
Well, it sounded amazing. He did the same basic intro he did in 2012 about loss and if we're here and you're here, then they're here. There's just something about that song. It's always been very meaningful to me, and I've loved it since we saw it in Asbury in 2000. I just thought it really brought the show up, and the crowd loves it. You know, again, it's a crowd participation song with the rise up, and they really nailed it. Now, I don't know if it'll be played again. It'll be interesting to see, but for this one night, I thought it just was the perfect selection right there.
Well, I got two comments on this one. The first is that he did the band introductions here.
Yes,
I guess
he did.
He didn't specifically name all the horn players, the backup singers, but he did do the rest of the core E Street band. So I was wondering if he was going to do that later in the show where he normally does it between dancing and 10th, but apparently he did. And the other thing is, was there anything that prompted him to play it? There hasn't been any kind of like disaster or anything in San Diego,
no,
has there?
It was sound checked. It's speculation on my part, but again, I think he was aware that he had not been in the city with E Street Band in a very long time, and he wanted to give a selection of songs that he had played a lot during that period, and obviously not in San Diego because he hadn't been there.
And then what's interesting to me is that he followed it up with Spirit in the Night, which is something he did quite a bit in 2012.
Yes.
So that really was right out of 12 years ago.
Yeah. And Don't Play That Song Last Night, I thought played a little bit better in the venue than it did on Friday night. Look, I mean, this is just being honest. I don't think the fans are into the Only the Strong Survive material. Now, I think Night Shift works on a different level because it ties into the theme of the show, and the performance, especially by Curtis and Bruce, is so great on that song. But Don't Play That Song. It's going to be very interesting to me to see if he sticks with it, especially if he is rotating through songs. Now, it seems like that would be a prime slot to potentially change.
Well, I guess he did last year at some point. And a little tidbit about Night Shift, actually. I was listening to the Sirius 80s on 8 Top 40 Countdown, and they were doing March 85. And Night Shift was number 24, and I'm on Fire was number 25. And I knew they were close. I didn't realize they were that close.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yes, it is.
Well,
I thought it was pretty wild.
What's funny about it is now in Portland, I'm sure this was also coincidence, but last year when Curtis was sick and they couldn't do Night Shift, he played I'm on Fire in its place.
Oh, that is wild. That is funny.
I didn't even think of that the first time you mentioned that stat to me, but it just hit me as we're talking. The second half of the show last night, the Backstreets was outstanding. Now, speaking of songs that I think could be rotated, Because the Night, which I understand is a Nils spotlight song. And Nils, sometimes I don't love his solo on Because the Night. He really nailed it last night. I thought that was actually a really good version of the song. But as far as change there, I think we can give Nils potentially a spotlight on another song. Does it have to be Because the Night every night of the 100-plus day tour? Now, needless to say, I'd kill to see Tunnel of Love, but there are other songs that we know that Nils does a great job on that potentially could be subbed in for Because the Night. And I don't see that one as tied to the theme as something like, obviously, Last Man Standing or Wrecking Ball or The Rising. So it seems to me like maybe we could get a little bit more variety there.
Well, that whole three-song sequence, Because the Night She's the One, Wrecking Ball, if there's any place that needs to be changed, it's that one. And I get that Wrecking Ball fits perfectly into the whole theme of death and keep and survival. I mean, I get that. But at the same time, I don't think it needs to be played at every show. And not only has Because the Night been played on every show on this tour, it was played every night on the last tour as well. So
yeah,
he's really neat. He really should get a little bit more imaginative when it comes to giving Nils a spotlight song. Now, I don't know of any solos that he does other than Tunnel of Love, though, that would really let him shine. Do you?
Youngstown? I don't know if it works as well in the show.
Yeah, that's one thing that really does work for Because the Night is that the segue from Backstreets into Because the Night works so well. The piano just sounds amazing. That's such a great segue. But then, you know, what about Frankie? Or what about the Prove It All Night 78 in that spot? And so Bruce has written a lot of songs for piano, so maybe he could find another one that would fit there and another one that would spotlight Nils.
Yeah, the same thing with She's the One. And yes, She's the One is obviously a classic off Born to Run, but it's weird because it wasn't played that much for a long period of time. And I don't see how that one connects as much to the theme. And now that it has to be played every night, it doesn't make as much sense to me. I mean, you could easily put numerous other rockers in the She's the One spot, and the show's going to work just as great, and I think the crowd's going to enjoy it just as much. Just like, and we'll get to the encores in a moment, but like last night he left Glory Days out and put Bobby Jean in its place. Those are two Born in the USA songs. They're both going to work with the crowd. So he made a switch, and I think it keeps things fresher. And I think that they felt that last night because there was an energy to the show, as I say, that was really, really something. He really thanked the crowd profusely at the end of the night. That was some audience and some show last night. It really was.
Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to listening to it then. And now the encores open with Detroit Medley and
Seven Nights.
Okay, I didn't realize that. And Seven Nights to Rock was on the set list. And you and I talked about this on our Patreon live stream the other night, that we both prefer the encore start with a song other than Born to Run, that it kind of warms it up, or it just feels weird going cold from audience into Born to Run. And so having the last two shows have featured something there to open the encores, and they seemed to work quite well.
It worked great. And I have to admit, while I was standing there watching the medley last night, and maybe it was because he was wearing clothing that was reminiscent of 2012, which obviously is now 12 years ago, I don't know what it was. Even from Friday night, he looks great, great for his age. But still, he definitely plays older, the way he walks and his movement and all that. I felt like last night we were back in a time machine during the Detroit medley. I was like, where did this energy come from? It was really quite phenomenal to see. And it's just stunning because he is going to be 75 years old in September. Now, they did create more buffer between the shows, which clearly was needed and is helping immensely. But I mean, to perform like that, it really last night blew me away. Not again that the Vegas show wasn't good, but the Vegas show was really good in the context of I'm here watching Bruce after 40 years and he's still up there and it's an amazing thing. He's 74 and a half years old, and who would have thought we would be here and he would be performing like this? Last night, I was like, what did he take over the weekend? I mean,
Was it like the LA 2016 shows where it was from the first night to the second? It was just night and day.
It was actually very similar to that. And if people don't know what you're talking about, in 2016, the final three shows at the Sports Arena, I thought the first night was really an off show. Lack of energy. And I think Bruce probably knew it as well. And they came out that second night. To me, I think that's still the best performance of the River from that year. They were completely locked in a way that they were not that first night in LA. And Vegas was a good show. I wouldn't put in talk about it in the same way I talked about LA Night 1 in 2016. Vegas was a very good show. I think when people listen to it, they're going to enjoy it. The San Diego show last night, though, was on a totally different level. And again, if set list wise, Vegas clearly superior, but everything about last night was phenomenal.
Well, good. He looked good coming out in Phoenix from the streams. He sounded great. And it just seems like every show has gotten better. And they're definitely on the right trajectory right now. And I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with two nights in San Francisco and then two nights in L.A.
Well, the second nights are going to be big because we'll see how much change there's going to be within the same city. And obviously, based on what we've seen from the first three nights, I think we can be very optimistic about that. He is intent on making more changes than he did last year. And that's going to make for better second shows, I think, in these cities.
Oh, absolutely. And I think the count is up to, what, at least 32 songs done on this leg so far. I don't have a count, but that seems to be in that ballpark. So you put the over under at 41, and maybe I'm a little bit optimistic here, but now I'm looking at the over.
Yeah, there's a lot of positives going on here, and it's just so great to see. You know, he said in his interview with Jim Rotolo that at one point he was concerned he'd never be able to sing again. And to see them out there, now, again, I'm raving about last night's show, but everyone who was in Phoenix said it was a great show. And if I hadn't seen last night's show and I'd just seen Vegas, I would have been like, that's a really, really high quality show for 2024. But I really was amazed last night. It was wonderful to see. There was a youth recaptured. And I think, again, part of it is the building. They love these old buildings. There's not many of them left. It makes for a great environment for a rock show. It's intimate. The sound was great. And this is just one of those nights, 1 + 1 = 3. And, you know, it's cliche by now, but it is the truth.
Well, he came up with that, at least when it comes to concerts. And so I'm looking forward to see how this plays out. It's going to be very interesting when he goes back to Europe, where he's making a return trip to a whole bunch of cities and countries, and then back to the States to make up some shows. Philly, I think I'm going to be circling that on my calendar.
Yeah, and it's funny because we had just been talking recently, I think on one of our Patreon episodes, that Rosalita, I felt, had gotten sticky. Last night's version of Rosalita was the best version of the song, I don't know how long, maybe dating back to the early days of the reunion era. It was crazy. Now, obviously, there is a reference to San Diego in the song, and I was curious to see how he was going to handle it. The band came to a complete stop, and then the entire crowd in unison yelled out, "Down San Diego Way." I didn't shoot any video of that. There's plenty of videos on the internet. You got to check this out if you haven't seen it, and you'll hear it in the bootleg. Bruce looked amazed. I mean, it was like the most perfect crowd participation. He stood and like saluted the crowd for several seconds, turning to everyone and like, "I salute you." And it really was a moment. And then he counted right back in and the band picked up like they hadn't missed a beat. It was great. There was delirium in the building at that point.
Well, it sounds like he kind of created the moment by bringing the music to a stop. So got to give him some credit for that. And it sounds like the band they knew how to do it. They probably didn't even sound check that. He probably just kind of motioned to everybody to stop and then did it. Maybe they were expecting it. I don't know.
Yeah, he had such a smile on his face during that moment. And he actually said something at the end of the night because he saluted the audience again and said what a wonderful audience they were. And then he said, very enthusiastically, "We will be back."
Well, let's hope he means it. That would mean more touring next year or the year after. So hey, bring it on.
Yeah, it was just it was a great night. And as I mentioned, Bobby Jean was in the encore. Welcome to see. I'm not one of these people who hates Bobby Jean. I actually think it's quite fun. In Europe, it was great with everyone waving their arms. He tried to get that going last night. It wasn't quite as successful. Certainly doesn't need to be an every nighter, but a lot of fun last night.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, as you said earlier, Bobby Jean for Glory Days, that's, you know, it could every few nights it could happen, and I don't think anybody would really complain.
Yeah.
Except my wife.
And they work, obviously, fantastically well. I mean, any song from Born in the USA really is going to work well, especially the rockers and the encore. So, and then the show finished with the usual three songs, Dancing, 10th Avenue, I'll See You in My Dreams. And as I said, he was very, very fired up at the end of that show. I was very, very fired up at the end of that show. I think a lot of people were very, very fired up at the end of that show. And he now has a really nice schedule for the next week and a half or so. He's got a couple of days off. Then he goes to San Francisco. They're going to play the two shows there. And then he's got like 4 days off before LA, and then another 4 days off before they go to Mohegan. So they're going to be well rested. Clearly, he's intent on working in more material. And as you said, the trajectory of this tour is headed very much in the right direction.
Oh, definitely. And I'm looking forward to seeing what happens. And it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. There's an extra enthusiasm going on right now and amongst the fan base. That is for sure.
Yeah, I was myself looking at the summer and thinking, okay, what might I be able to see? And I haven't made any decisions yet. I'll probably wait months before I do that. But just the fact that I am this fired up is really making me happy.
Well, that's good. That's good to hear. Let's keep that going, Mr. Springsteen.
And it's good for our podcast.
That is for sure. We have fun stuff to talk about. We won't be bitching about set lists for an hour every other week. So that's a very good thing for us.
I do expect that there's going to be some people out there at some point hoping that he changes the second half of the show. And as we said, certainly there are songs like Because the Night and She's the One we'd like to see rotated. I just think that Radio Nowhere in there for one of those songs every now and then would work really well. But just the fact that they're out there and playing this well, especially what we know he went through last year, it's wonderful. That's the only word you can use. And, you know, who really thought, if someone had said to me in the year that Bruce Springsteen turned 75, you're still going to be watching shows and you're going to enjoy them as much as you did last night, I would have obviously signed for that because, you know, I'm coming up on my 40th anniversary of the first time I saw him. And it certainly would have been inconceivable to me in 1984 that I was going to be seeing shows in 2024.
Well, I kind of doubt you even thought about anything happening in 2024, much less whether you'd still be seeing Springsteen or not. But your point is taken. This has been he's still rocking. He's still putting out, as I said earlier, sure, 2/3 of the show is 84 and earlier, but I think a third of the show, or even more, like it was last night, from after that, I think is more than what many of his peers are doing. So
yes.
Yes, just keep it up. Keep it up, Bruce. He is a freak of nature. I was wondering about that last year, but after MetLife and certainly the start of this year's touring, I think he is.
Yeah, as I said, with how he described his health at MetLife, the fact that he played those shows and MetLife 3 was as big as it was, it makes me think it's like Michael Jordan when he had the flu against Utah. I mean, it's that kind of elevated, and that's why they're stars, because in the moment, they just, whatever has to be done is done. And that was how Jordan was, and that's how Bruce is. And it's quite amazing. Now, before we finish up with the news of the day, I do want to give a public service announcement to everyone out there. For any of our listeners who are going to shows, you may want to be aware, and I heard this from a couple of people, and it happened 2 of the 3 nights. the intent is he's going on at the state at 7:30 ticket time regularly now. He went on at 7:30 exactly in Phoenix. He went on at 7:30 exactly last night. In Vegas, they had a problem getting the audience in, so he went on about 15 minutes later. But we had been told earlier in the day he was going on at 7:30. And if you're going to a show, especially if you're used to him going on later, as we know, there were certain nights on the Magic Tour he went on as late as 8:40 or so. That's not the case anymore. You should be in your seat or be down wherever you want to be in the pit at 7:30 because he is likely going to be on the stage.
And I got to say, I'm not complaining about that at all.
Oh, it's amazing.
I love that. It's amazing. You know, it's one less hour standing in the pit or just sitting in the venue, and that's 1 hour earlier you get to go home. And yes, yeah, no, I'm getting old. I admit that.
it's fabulous because there's no reason to be standing there doing nothing. So
no, there's not. No,
it's not like there's an opening act. And we were always standing in the pit on those nights where he didn't go on until 8:15, 8:20, as I said, some nights even 8:40. And we were like, why is this necessary to bring people into a pit situation? And now we're going to be standing through the long show and we're standing here. We obviously all did it and we had tremendous fun at those shows, but it is great that he's going on at 7:30 and you don't have to wait. We were in the building last night. I think I walked in maybe around 10 after six and you know, we were there, we were chatting with people, got a little food. And the next thing you knew, he was on stage rocking.
And 10 years ago, you would have been waiting 2 hours instead of 1.5. Yeah, so
I never really enjoyed that. I always enjoyed the shows, but I never enjoyed that aspect of it. And as we know, there was a night in Kansas City, 2008, the final night of the Magic Tour officially, where he set off some very angry letters to the editor, where some of the locals on a Sunday night were not expecting him to go on at 8:45 and then play for, I think it was whatever it was, 3 hours, 3 hours and 15 minutes. And people were very upset about it. Now, they should have to deal with Madonna, who I understand has been coming on as late as like 10:30 or something on this tour. It is great that he's going on at 7:30, and I hope he continues it.
Me too. My legs would also appreciate it. My knees, my back, all of my joints. So keep it up, Bruce.
Okay, and to wrap things up tonight, let's get to the news of the day. Deadline.com, one of the major Hollywood trades, broke exclusively this afternoon that the movie about the making of Nebraska has some real momentum behind it. They had previously reported that Scott Cooper was set to write and direct. We now know officially it's an adaptation of Warren Zane's book, Deliver Me From Nowhere, with former Netflix film division head Scott Stuber producing and high-end independent studio A24 in negotiations to distribute the film. And in Hollywood parlance, they are circling Jeremy Allen White of The Bear to play Bruce. That means he's not signed or anything yet, but that's who they want to play the role. Now, you never really know in Hollywood where films often wind up in development hell, but it seems like they're hopeful to get into production later this year. And I'd say this has the potential to be a very noteworthy project, and I'd expect if it happens, it will premiere at one of the major film festivals.
So if they're filming this fall, what are we looking at in terms of even the first film festival next year?
That would be a tough one to call because it'll depend on how long the post-production is. Obviously, Cannes is in May. That would be the first one I would think that would be possible, but more likely one of the fall festivals, which would be either Toronto or Venice. And of course, several of Bruce's projects have premiered at Toronto, and that's a very key festival in the fall for setting up an awards run.
Well, as I said, when this first broke, it'd be interesting to see what the storytelling arc would be and what the quote-unquote climax of the film would be. You would think releasing an acoustic album when is not exactly something big. I can't think of any films with huge climaxes, or Titanic, I guess that's one. So that's going to be interesting to see how they work that out. And I'll be honest, is this the time to get Electra Nebraska? Are they going to show Bruce in the studio working on that material with the band and then going, eh, no, it doesn't work. In which case, does it get on the soundtrack? Those are big questions, especially considering this is the 40th anniversary of little album called Born in the USA.
Yeah, I think it's too early to answer those questions. I would expect that there's probably going to be some kind of companion release. This fits in very well with what Sony is doing now that they own the catalog. They probably would have happened anyway, but there's good synergy here. I would expect there will be at least one companion piece and probably a soundtrack album.
When you say companion piece, what do you mean?
Well, that they would maybe put out something in addition to a soundtrack album, like you're suggesting, that would be the time to put out a Making of Nebraska box set where they got into this stuff. Now, of course, this is, you know, fantasy on my part, but Sony spent a lot of money, as we know, and you're going to have a very high profile project. Cooper is a really cool director. One of my favorites of his is this film Out of the Furnace with Christian Bale. If you haven't seen it, check it out. He actually used a version of Pearl Jam's release that Eddie Vedder reworked for that film specifically. Really tense, interesting film. And, you know, there's a lot of high-end talent here. So if it comes to fruition, it seems very sensible that Sony would capitalize on it.
Well, that's great. If it means hearing additional music or new music from Springsteen, whether it's recorded yesterday or 40 years ago, I'm all for that. That is for sure.
Well, here's another interesting question that we'll not know for a very long time, at least in terms of the answer. Are they going to use Bruce's vocals in the film? Will they have Jeremy Allen White actually singing? It could be an amalgamation of the two. Obviously, these are just questions that come to mind, and we will anxiously await seeing the film. It actually gave me a little agita today because, as you know, these films put on huge awards campaigns, and there's a lot of really cool screening, and there's a lot of competition to get into these things. And I was thinking to myself, oh my God, Bruce is now going to be out here on the award circuit doing Q&As and stuff like that. I'm going to be having a heart attack that I'm not going to get into some of these events.
Well, wasn't it one of those events where you broke the news about Bruce had new music he was going to record with the band?
The Netflix event in 2019, which I was fortunate enough to get into. And that was really shocking. As you know, I texted you that day. He was talking to Scorsese. And suddenly out of nowhere, he's like, I just wrote an entire album. And I was like, what? That predates our podcast. We would have tweeted that out now. That would have gotten a lot of attention.
Yes. And that's, I don't think he quite wrote a whole album worth, I think two thirds. That was the birth of Ghost.
Yes.
Or, that was, letter, of course, letter to you, Rhett.
Yeah.
I think Ghost is a better song, but whatever.
Yeah. So, and I do expect if they make this movie, I mean, it says that Bruce and Landau are involved. Definitely when it comes time to promoting it, especially if it's up for awards, I would think Bruce will be heavily involved. He did get involved for the Netflix Springsteen on Broadway production. And this would be much bigger. I mean, you know, these awards campaigns that these studios run are really quite involved. Some of them are just incredible events to attend, and it'll be really exciting. And I hope the movie works well with the talent involved. I expect that it will.
Yeah. And congratulations to Warren Zanes for making this happen with his book. I'm sure he got a nice little extra paycheck for this. So
I would think so.
So good for him. Good for him.
Yeah. And it's an exciting project for us because if this does come to fruition, I think, you know, hopefully we'll spend some time on it and we'll get some cool people on, fingers crossed.
Yes. Let's hope for that.
All right. I think we're pretty much done here for today. We didn't really have like a topic like we normally have, but we had the tour.
It was called the tour, the 2024 tour.
It's great to be able to talk about a tour. So
exactly.
We obviously waited for a long time on this podcast to get to that. And again, just so excited with what I saw last night. And otherwise, I'll just wrap things up. None But the Brave is a presentation of Evergreen Podcast and produced by Bull Market Entertainment. want to tell you about our Patreon page, which is really hopping these days, patreon.com/MBTB podcast. We have our subscriber-only message board, Brave Talk. We put out a number of extra mini episodes covering stuff from the tour in the last week. We did a live stream Sunday night. People seem to be enjoying it, which is great. So again, check out patreon.com/MBTB podcast. And of course, on Twitter/X, you can find us at MBTB podcast.
So for Hal Schwartz, I'm Flynn McLean saying thanks for listening and see you further on up the road.
Thank you so much. We'll be seeing you.
Hey, you. Do you have any plans this year? How's that going? Did you get 2020? Well, welcome to a brand new podcast called 2020, where myself, Benny Goodman, and my good friends Corey Pazin and Siobhan Cronin from the band Lost Symphony also got 2020.
And since the world ended this year, we decided why not just check in with some of our friends in the music industry and see how everyone's doing.
We're going to get a candid look at life on and off the stage, as well as the mindset of some of the most successful people in the entertainment industry.
New episodes drop every Sunday and Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And you can listen at 2020-d.com, soundtalentmedia.com, or on your favorite podcast app.